1 Timothy 2 instructs us to pray for those who are in authority over us. In America, we not only have the right to pray, but also the right and responsibility to vote. How do you know which candidate will uphold biblical values, though? Board of Votes Values is currently seeking volunteers to help produce a voter guide in your county. If you are interested in helping voters vote their values, visit www.floridavotesvalues.com and send us a message. Again, that's www.floridavotesvalues.com.
Welcome to The Lighthouse, a ministry of Covenant Tabernacle World Outreach Center. And now for today's message, here's Associate Pastor Brian Long.
One of the things that we have heard quite a bit with the various protests, some of them aren't protests, some of them are riots that have been going on, is that slavery is the original sin of America. And in fact, it was at this time last year that Nike made a shoe with the Betsy Ross flag on it, and Colin Kaepernick protested that, and Nike then announced that they would cancel that shoe because slavery was in the Founding Fathers, and the Founding Fathers, some of them owned slaves. One of the things that we're going to look at today, we're going to look at history, and we're going to see what actually happened in history. And we're also going to look at the Bible and see what the Bible says about slavery. Was slavery the fault of the Founding Fathers and the fault of this country? From wallbuilders.com, we're going to read about the Founding Fathers and slavery. By the way, this is news, or this is history that really you don't get in public schools anymore. You don't get this history. You're not going to hear this really even in a lot of Christian schools, and even in a lot of churches, you're not going to hear this truth, but this is truth. Even though the issue of slavery is often raised as a discrediting charge against the Founding Fathers, the historical fact is that slavery was neither the product of, nor was it an evil introduced by the Founding Fathers. Slavery had been introduced to America nearly two centuries before the founders. As President of Congress, Henry Lawrence explained, "I abhor slavery. I was born in a country where slavery had been established by British kings and parliaments, as well as by the laws of the country ages before my existence. In former days, there was no combating the prejudices of men supported by interest. The day, I hope, is approaching when, from the principles of gratitude as well as justice, every man will strive to be foremost in showing his readiness to comply with the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you," Matthew 7:12. Prior to the time of the Founding Fathers, there had been no serious efforts to dismantle the institution of slavery. John Jay, who was, by the way, our first Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, identified the point at which the change in attitude towards slavery began. Prior to the Great Revolution, the great majority of people had been so long accustomed to the practice and convenience of having slaves that very few among them even doubted the propriety and rectitude of it. The Revolution was the turning point in the national attitude, and it was the Founding Fathers who contributed greatly to that change. In fact, many of the founders vigorously complained against the fact that Great Britain had forcibly imposed upon the colonies the evil of slavery. For example, Thomas Jefferson heavily criticized that British policy. This was, by the way, from the original draft of the Declaration of Independence. He, King George III, has waged cruel war against human nature itself, violating its most sacred rights of life and liberty in the persons of a distant people who never offended him, captivating and carrying them into slavery in another hemisphere, or to incur miserable death in their transportation thither. Determined to keep open a market where men should be bought and sold, he has prostituted his negative for suppressing every legislative attempt to prohibit or to restrain the exercisable commerce. That is, he has opposed efforts to prohibit the slave trade. Benjamin Franklin, in 1773, in a 1773 letter to Dean Woodward, confirmed that whenever the Americans had attempted to end slavery, the British government had thwarted those attempts. Franklin explained that a disposition of slavery prevails in North America, that many of Pennsylvania have set their slaves at liberty, and that even the Virginia Assembly have petitioned the king for permission to make a law that preventing the importation of more into that colony. This request, however, will probably not be granted, as their former laws of that kind have always been repealed. Did you get that? Previous to this time, Virginia had already repealed slavery, the slave trade, but the king had annulled those laws, and they were seeking his permission to abolish the slave trade. Further confirmation that even the Virginia founders were not responsible for slavery, but actually tried to dismantle the institution, was provided by John Quincy Adams, the son of John Adams, known as the Hellhound of Abolition, for his extensive efforts against that evil. Adams explained the inconsistency of the institution of domestic slavery with the principles of the Declaration of Independence was seen and lamented by all the Southern patriots of the Revolution, no one with deeper and more unalterable conviction than the author of the Declaration himself, Jefferson. No charge of insincerity or hypocrisy can be fairly laid to their charge. Neither from their lips was heard a syllable of attempt to justify the institution of slavery. They universally considered it a reproach fastened upon them by an unnatural stepmother, Great Britain, and they saw that before the principles of the Declaration of Independence, slavery, in common with every other mode of oppression, was destined sooner or later to be banished from the earth. Such was the undoubting conviction of Jefferson to his dying day in the memoir of his life, written at the age of 77, he gave to his countrymen a solemn and emphatic warning that the day was not distant when they must hear and adopt a general emancipation of their slaves. While Jefferson himself had introduced a bill designed to end slavery, not all the Southern founders were opposed to slavery. According to the testimony of Virginians James Madison and Thomas Jefferson, it was the founders from North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia who most strongly favored slavery. Yet despite the support for slavery in those states, The clear majority of the founders opposed this evil. For instance, when some of the Southern pro-slavery advocates invoked the Bible in support of slavery, Elias Boudinot, the president of Congress, the Continental Congress, replied, "Even the sacred scriptures have been quoted to justify this iniquitous traffic. It is true that the Egyptians held the Israelites in bondage for 400 years, but gentlemen cannot forget the consequences that followed. They were delivered by a strong and stretched out arm, and it ought to be remembered that the Almighty Power has accomplished their deliverance is the same yesterday, today, and forever." Many of the founding fathers who had owned slaves as British citizens released them in the years following America's separation from Great Britain. By the way, did you know George Washington, John Dickerson, Caesar Rodney, William Livingston, George Wythe, John Randolph of Roanoke, and others were among those who let their slaves go free? Have you learned that? Have you heard that from the protesters? Furthermore, many of the founders had never owned slaves. For example, John Adams proclaimed, "My opinion against it, slavery, has always been known. Never in my life did I own a slave." For many of the founders, their feelings against slavery went beyond words. For example, in 1774, Benjamin Franklin and John Rush founded America's first anti-slavery society. By the way, 1774, before the signing of the Declaration of Independence even. John Jay was president of a similar society in New York. In fact, when signer of the Constitution, William Livingston, heard of the New York Society, he, as governor of New Jersey, wrote them offering, "I would most ardently wish to become a member of it," the Society of New York, "and I can safely promise that neither my tongue nor my pen nor purse shall be wanting to promote the abolition of what to me appears so inconsistent with humanity and Christianity. May the great and equal Father of the human race, who has expressly declared his abhorrence of oppression and that he is no respecter of persons, succeed a design so laudably calculated to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke." Other prominent founding fathers who were members of societies for ending slaves included Richard Bassett, James Madison, James Monroe, Bushrod Washington, Charles Carroll, William Few, John Marshall, Richard Stockton, Zephaniah Swift, and many more. In fact, based in part on the effort of these founding fathers, Pennsylvania and Massachusetts began abolishing slavery in 1780. By the way, did you hear that? Did Colin Kaepernick tell you that Pennsylvania and Massachusetts started abolishing slavery in 1780? Connecticut and Rhode Island did so in 1784. Vermont in 1786. New Hampshire in 1792. New York in 1799. And New Jersey did so in 1804. Additionally, the reason Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Iowa all prohibited slavery was a congressional act authorized by Congress by constitutional signer Rufus King and signed into law by President George Washington, which prohibited slavery in those trades. It is not surprising that Washington would sign such a law, for it was he who had declared, "I can only say that there is not a man living who wishes more sincerely than I do to see a plan adopted for the abolition of it, slavery. The truth is that the founding fathers who were responsible, it was the founding fathers who were responsible for planting and nurturing the first seeds of their recognition of black equality and the eventual end of slavery. This is a fact made clear by Richard Allen. Allen had been a slave in Pennsylvania, but was freed after he converted his master to Christianity. Allen, a close friend of Benjamin Rush and several other founding fathers, went on to become the founder of the AME Church in America. In an early address to the people of color, he explained, "Many of the white people have been instrumental in the hands of God for our good, even such as have been held us in captivity, and are now pleading our cause with earnest zeal." So these are some things that you really probably haven't heard from the protesters, haven't heard from Colin Kaepernick. While much progress was made by the founders to end the institution of slavery, unfortunately, what they began was not fully achieved until generations later. Yet despite the strenuous effort of many founders to recognize the practice that all men are created equal, charges persist to the opposite. So when we actually look, one of the things that we see here is that the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States, commonly called the Declaration of Independence, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And Thomas Jefferson, who was the author of this, never himself abolished his or emancipated his slaves, but he did pen these words that were used by abolitionists and that were used to successfully bring about the abolition of slavery. The principle comes from a principle that we've talked about several times over the last few weeks. The biblical basis for abolishing slavery and protecting every innocent human life is the Imago Dei, found in Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 through 27. "Then God said, 'Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds in the air, and over the cattle, over all things, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth.' So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them." So here we see that we actually see that God created the heavens and the earth. He created man in his own image. And by the way, whether that person has black skin, has white skin, has brown skin, has yellow skin, has any color of skin in between, we're created in God's image. And because of that, our life is valuable. And we deserve the same rights and liberties. Every single person deserves the same rights and liberties of others. We're going to look at what the Bible has to say about slavery. And the issue of slavery was a difficult issue because there was slavery in the Bible. The slavery in the Bible that you commonly see, though, with Jewish people owning other Jewish people was very, very different than the kind of slavery that you see that we saw in America, and that, by the way, was practiced not only in America, but all across the world at the time, and in fact has been practiced for thousands of years, not only in America, but throughout centuries. And by the way, People of African descent are not the only ones that have been slaves. There have been slaves from other places. And of course, the Jewish people were the first recorded instance that we see in recorded history of slavery, when the Egyptians held them slaves. But in Deuteronomy chapter 15, verses 12 through 18, we see, if your brother, a Hebrew man or Hebrew woman, is sold to you and serves you 6 years, then in the seventh year you shall let him go free from you. And when you send him away free from you, you shall not let him go away empty-handed. You shall supply him liberally from your flock, from your threshing floor, and from your wine press. From what the Lord has blessed you with, you shall give to him. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you. Therefore, I command you this thing today. And if it happens that he says to you, I will not go away from you, because he loves you and your house, since he has prospered with you, then you shall take an awl and thrust it through his ear to the door, and he shall be your servant forever. Also to your female servant you shall do likewise. It shall not seem hard to you when you send him away free from you, for he has been worth a double hired servant in serving you 6 years. Then the Lord your God will bless you in all you do. You can also look at Exodus chapter 21, verses 1 through 6. You'll see a very similar passage. And then in Leviticus chapter 25, earlier in the chapter, you'll see a similar passage as well. What would happen is if a Jewish person were poor and had debts, he could actually sell himself as a slave for up to 6 years. So every seventh year, there was a releasing of those who had been bought as slaves. So he could sell whatever amount of time was left, he would sell himself for that time. Now, that's obviously very, very different from what actually happened in America, where people didn't sell themselves, but they were kidnapped. By the way, the biblical penalty for kidnapping in Exodus chapter 21, verse 16, is that the person who kidnapped someone else should be put to death. By the way, who kidnapped the slaves? It was other Africans. Very often, Muslims, black Muslims that were kidnapping the people that were being, the other Africans that were being sold as slaves. You really don't hear protest about the black Muslims that kidnapped other black men from Africa and women and sold them as slaves. You don't hear a protest about that. But this is something that really we need to look at. Now, in Leviticus chapter 25, verses 48 through 50, we also see that slaves were allowed to be redeemed. If a person sold himself as a slave and he later came into money, or someone else, one of his family members, wanted to redeem him, they were allowed to redeem them. Also, in Leviticus chapter 25, verses 44 through 47, we see that they were allowed to actually own slaves from other nations, and these slaves from other nations would not go free as their slaves. And so you know, this presented a very difficult issue for people, for Christians to grapple with. And it wasn't until the founding fathers, when people started saying, wait a minute, if we're free, if we believe that God has endowed us with liberty, then God also should endow others with liberty as well. In the New Testament, we see that there's no difference. You can read Galatians chapter 3, verses 28 through 39, also Romans 10, verse 12, Colossians 3, verse 11. There's no difference between Jew and Greek. So God, in the New Testament, God abolished this separation of Jew and Greek. There's no difference. And so that type of slavery of owning someone from another country and giving them as a possession to your children, that's not a type of slavery that God condones. In fact, the Bible tells us to love God and to love our neighbor as ourselves. And in Luke chapter 10, verses 25 through 37, the example that God gives is of a Samaritan who, by the way, was hated by the Jews. Much stronger hatred than we have seen with racial tension in America between blacks and whites. But the Samaritan was hated by the Jews, yet the Samaritan was the one, the good Samaritan was the one that showed mercy to the Jewish man. So we need to thank God, really, I think, for our founders that brought this idea that all men are created equal, that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And we need to take that same principle today to the masses and really educate people about the truth of where our founding, what our founding fathers' position was. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make His face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace. Now to Him who is able to keep you from stumbling and to present you faultless before the presence of His glory with exceeding joy. To God our Savior, who alone is wise, be glory and majesty, dominion and power, both now and forever. Amen.
Listening to The Lighthouse, a ministry of Covenant Tabernacle in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Join us each Sunday morning for The Lighthouse. If you've been blessed by this broadcast, visit www.covenanttabernacle.com, where you can give us feedback and make a donation.
First Timothy 2 instructs us to pray for those who are in authority over us. In America, we not only have the right to pray, but also the right and responsibility to vote. How do you know which candidate will uphold biblical values, though? Board of Votes Values is currently seeking volunteers to help produce a voter guide in your county. If you are interested in helping voters vote their values, visit www.floridavotesvalues.com and send us a message. Again, that's www.floridavotesvalues.com.
Like a river, fall like the rain. Streams of compassion flow from His throne, wide as the ocean, deep as the sea. Life-giving fire. God's love for me, flow like a river, fall like the rain, streams of compassion flow from His throne, wide as the ocean, deep as the sea. God's love